Welcome to a NerdSign episode of the Click Nation Comic Book Chronicles.
Yay!
Sound effects are back, baby.
Woohoo!
I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined by the Spider-Man icon to your left, Classic Material. We also you there, Classic?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. Also got Agent underscore 70.
Hello. What's up, people?
And last but not least, we have PCN underscore Dirt, or aka Dirt, from popculturenetwork.com.
Someone's at the door.
And of course, my website is theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles podcast in the video format and the audio format to listen to on iTunes and Stitcher Radio, or to download to listen offline. Make sure to follow the Twitter account at theclicknation.
Is someone else hearing that echo, or is that just me?
I don't hear an echo. Anyone else?
That's probably from my phone. I'm going to put some headphones.
Oh, okay. As Classic puts some headphones in, like our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Thank you. Circle us on Google+. Just search for The Click Nation page, and also join the community. Yes, the Click Nation community on Google+. YouTube.com/TheClickNation. And also, if you ever have any feedback or comments you want to have read on a future show, send that to TheClickNation@gmail.com. And last shout outs to ComicRelated.com, who also houses some of our comic book related podcasts. You can find them on comicrelated.com. We're a part of their podcasting network.
Cool.
Yes, sir. So the gang's all here this week. It's a busy week. It was a busy week in comic book releases this week. Marvel had a boatload of books. DC had a boatload, and of course the Independents, some good books out there. We'll get all into that.
It must have been like a free 4th of July strategy. It's like, let's get all our books out there. Like,
I muted Classic for a minute while he gets his
It's because it was 5th week.
Mm.
And so and also I think because June is the end of the fiscal. So it's like, it was the last week of the month, so everything that was going to come out had to be out by then. And also, if it was going to be out for the fiscal, it had to be out now, you know, to right. have it released. So otherwise, a lot of them are going to fall into late, because once they go into July, then they become like a different quarter, and you know, then they've got to resolicit them in previews and stuff like that. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it dawned on me that it seems like it's been more than 4 weeks since the last Hawkeye issue came out, and then it came out this week. So I was like, oh, mm-hmm. okay. But it might not have been longer than four. It just seemed like four to me.
I just love it so much. If it's more than 1 week, it seems like forever.
I know. Pizza Dog. We'll get to him later. Test, say something real quick. I want to make sure you're not muted now.
I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Yes. Okay. While you were getting your headphones set, I hit the button to mute you for a second. I just want to make sure sound was coming from you again.
I'd mute me too.
Yeah. So. So with not too much comic book news this week, but a few things I wanted to bring up. Jim Carrey no longer supports the Kick-Ass 2 movie.
Boo.
Cry baby.
If I could be a chauvinist here for a second, it sounds like he changed his tune to impress some chick. It just sounds like that. Someone came up to him and was like, oh, well, you know, I hate violence in movies, and are you doing this Kick-Ass thing? It seems really violent. He was like, nah, baby, I never do no Kick-Ass thing. In fact, I denounce it right now.
Did his voice get deep just like that? Nah, baby.
Yes, exactly. Well, he was on Unliving Color for a few years. So.
That's right.
Does anybody remember, like, I don't know, maybe it was 2 years ago, he did some really creepy video he put on YouTube talking to, like, Emma Stone, I think it was. We just did, like, this 5-minute ramble about how beautiful she was and how talented she was and how much he appreciated her work and whatever. And it was, like, the creepiest stalking-looking thing I've ever seen. So the idea that maybe his girlfriend is like, hey, you should say something about guns. He's like, oh, yeah, I hate guns. You know, just totally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the amazing. Same reason why a lot of guys are – yeah, to handle all these causes and, you know, and they try to eat gluten-free. Yeah, we don't care about that shit as men. It's because of the chicks. And yes,
hey, plus I like the chauvinist.
Yeah, more gluten, please.
Yeah, gluten, you know, that's flavor.
That's hard.
And just so everyone knows, the reason Jim Carrey came out and said he doesn't support Kick-Ass 2 anymore is, you know, of course, the movie was filmed before the tragedy at a Which Sandy school Hook. Shooting was it? Sandy Hook?
Sandy Hook Elementary.
So after that happened, he kind of felt bad. So now, even though his character in the movie doesn't use guns, he just uses, I think, baseball bats. He still, I guess, feels bad about the violence overall in the movie.
Well, I mean, again, to be a cynic here, did he not read the book before signing on to do the movie? I mean, it was out. It wasn't like, you know, Kick-Ass 2 was just a big surprise. You know, I'm sure Millar had copies of the script and the comic on set. You know, did he not know, or is just, you know, he have an Ebenezer Scrooge type dream?
Yeah, plus it's not like that guy walked into the school and said, I am the Kick-Ass killer, and started shooting everybody because of what he read in Kick-Ass. You know, it's not like that was in any way related. But the fact that, you know, you can draw it together to make some sort of political points with somebody, just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. I say he must not want to go on a promotion tour for the movie.
And maybe he just wanted to get out of it.
Yeah.
I think it might even be a publicity stunt. You know, this might be like, kind of one of those kind of swerves you've seen wrestling, where he's like, well, I'm just going to say that I denounced the movie, and that's going to get more attention to the movie, because people are going to be like, what's the controversy about? I've got to see this now. You know, and yes, everyone sounds like that.
You could be right.
You know, I have forgot Kick-Ass 2 comes out this, it comes out this summer, right?
Yes.
August, baby.
Yeah. It's August.
I got to call Collective.
It's like a long gap.
Get his bro date going.
I guess July. Like July has the Wolverine, I guess, comes out.
Yeah, the Wolverine.
Which I'm not excited for. But, so that's Kick-Ass 2 news. Next up, we have Boom Studios acquires Arkea.
Yep, that's a big deal, man.
How do you pronounce that?
Arkea,
which I know nothing about. But apparently it makes Boom Studios like the largest comic distributor or something like that?
Well, the non-Marvel, non-DC,
right?
Pretty much. Yeah. Arkea is known primarily for their hardcovers.
And Mouse Guard.
Well, yeah, and Mouse Guard. But primarily they collect everything into big hardbacks and put them into bookstores. And a lot of their books come out as hardcovers first and go to Barnes & Noble, whatever. And then later on, they'll be broken into chapters and put out as issues. Or now what they've been doing is they'll put out the hardcover, but then they'll take the chapters and put them out digitally, you know, every so often. But they're a big, like, book publisher. Like, I remember one time at a convention, the president of Arkea said that they're comics for book snobs, was basically how they look at it. And everything they do is just, you know, well-crafted, well-bound, beautiful artwork, beautiful. Yeah, the paper is always really nice. It's always a high-quality book and whatever. And so, you know, Boom has a lot of properties that they're turning into movies, and Arkea has been doing a lot of stuff, getting Jim Henson licenses, doing Fraggle Rock and Dark Crystal, and they're working on Labyrinth and that kind of stuff. And Arkea also had guy who plays Spock. I can't think of his name.
Quinto, the new Spock?
Yes, Quinto. They had Quinto write a book, came out last year called Lucid. I don't know if he co-wrote or if he just sat down with a writer and said, hey, this guy should do this, and, you know, whatever. But so Arkea has a lot of fingers in, you know, Hollywood as well. So the two companies coming together with, you know, all the shift, the crossover that's going on, it just seems to make a lot of sense.
And Arkea had been having some, you know, kind of some business issues for the last year or so, because when I spoke to David Peterson, the Mouse Guard, you know, creator and writer and artist, he kind of made it, you know, pretty clear, you know, in no uncertain terms, that Arkea was having some business difficulties, and that was one of the reasons why Mouse Guard was having some trouble getting out on time. Yeah.
I think part of it stemmed from Borders when it closed.
Yes.
Because they, being a bookstore, you know, type company, and when you have one of the major booksellers go out of business, that really kind of, you know, it hurts, it causes problems. And they were also having a lot of issues kind of figuring out how they were going to fit digital in with the regular comics and with the books, because the books is always their main focus and everything else is kind of, you know, tangential. What they publish. So I know they had a lot of problems dealing with that too, but I mean, they're the type of guys that if you go to a convention, you can walk up to anybody who works for that company and just start asking questions. We'll sit and talk to you for a half hour. You know, they're always really good about that.
Definitely. I agree. So that's, you know, I'm glad to see that RK is not going away. That's the bottom line. Even if they were absorbed, you know, they're still in business in the sense that at least they're still working with Boom.
You know, I didn't know that movie with Denzel Washington and Mark Wahlberg was being made, the movie being made from Boom Studios.
Was that Two Guns?
Yep. Yeah, actually, Boom Studios sent us a review copy of that for our Comaholics podcast on Pop Culture Network. So we read that like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, whatever, when it came out. And we were both like, wow, this is a really good story. This would make an excellent, like, buddy cop type movie. You know, and then sure enough, they got it signed. So this is one I've actually been looking forward to for a while.
Cool. There you go. All righty.
So it was just a limited series, the original comic?
I think they sent us the trade, but I think it was 4 issues or 6 issues that got collected. And basically you had 2 undercover agents. I think one was a FBI and one was a DEA. And they were both undercover, and neither one knew that the other guy was undercover. And they were both trying to, you know, bring down the other guy. And then suddenly they realized that, you know, somehow they were outed and they were both brought down by the bad guys at the same time. And now they're so far deep undercover that they've got to, you know, work together to try to work their way out of it. But there's a lot of funny stuff where, you know, they both are undercover thinking that the other one's a dirtbag, and they start to turn on the other guy to arrest him. Well, you can't get me, I'm DEA. Well, you can't get me, I'm FBI, you know? And they have to work through this realization, like, oh my, you know, we've been playing each other, you know, because we don't, you know, the groups don't talk to each other. But it was a fun, you know, action oriented story. So yeah, again, looking forward to it.
Yeah, okay. Non-superhero comic for once.
Yep.
We like those every now and then. Let's see other news. Sort of similar from a different company, sort of similar news. I know Dark Horse announced that their graphic novels are available on the iBookstore now. Nothing really more to say about that. And last bit of news.
What are you guys got any recommendations?
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, you guys got any recommendations for Dark Horse graphic novels?
I always see Dark Horse in the advancements. They always have graphic novels along with their single issues, but I know I never have time to read them since they're, you know, so long compared to the single issues. I know there's always like a Star Wars graphic novel, trade paperback, and I guess trade paperback same as graphic novel. That's different, isn't it?
No, I mean, generally a trade is a collection.
Yeah, a graphic novel is meant to be written specifically as being one big book, as opposed to a trade, which is taking the individual issues and reprinting them as a book. But people just use them, you know, interchangeably now. It's kind of like how someone picks up a CD and says, "Hey, I just bought a new album." You know, it's just kind of one of those things.
The whole language has just been co-opted.
So I guess the trade paperbacks would be available in the bookstore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what is actually available because I don't use any iDevices. So
I've got one here.
So you could pull it up and look then.
Yeah. I'll do that while announcing the next, the last piece of news had.
I had a piece of news.
Okay.
Go ahead. But,
mine's quick.
Okay, go ahead and do yours.
Yeah, I'll do mine's quick. It was Greg Pak and Aaron Cooter taking over Action Comics in November. So I'm assuming I can see Greg Pak staying on that book a while. So maybe
Greg Pak is one of the cooler creators that you can meet at a convention too, so more props to him.
He's also a guy who I forget which book it was, but he wrote something that was one of the first big books on Comixology. I think it was before the whole day and date stuff, when they were just, you know, the different companies were putting their toes in the water and trying it out, and he got a whole bunch of codes from Comixology and was giving them away on Twitter. You know, he's like, I want people to check it out. I want people to get into digital comics, you know. So he took it upon himself to get a whole bunch of codes to give away. And I thought that was always really cool. That's something that you don't always see.
Yeah, because he gave me a free code for Extreme X-Men number one when it came out. And this was like, I guess, whatever, 2 years ago, whenever that book first launched. And before I even thought about doing a show or trying to read so many books a month.
There you go.
Okay, so Dark Horse.
Any more news? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, you're still trying out
Well, I open up to go to the store. The first thing I have at the top, Dark Horse graphic novels just added. So if I click on it, there's a whole row of Star Wars stuff. Star Wars.
Is Star Wars Agent of the Empire? Is that on there? That one's really nice. Good.
That's the first one. It's $10.99.
Eesh, that's a little high, but. It's a good story.
And then they got Buffy stuff, Hellboy, Sin City, Vampire Hunter D, and then everything else. Okay. I might actually go through this after the show. I'm going to check out the agents after the show, see what that's talking about. But Dirt has some news he wanted to share.
Well,
go for it.
One thing, there have been rumors circulating for a long time about the Ultimate Universe maybe going away. And part of the talks have been that, you know, the movies launched and they took a lot of influences from the Ultimate Universe. But then the influences from the movie are now coming in the regular Marvel Universe. So it's becoming redundant. They were supposed to be these two, you know, completely different things. And now they're starting to overlap a lot. So there's been talk that maybe the Ultimate Universe is going to be going away. And there are rumors that Miles Morales may actually be the Spider-Man. He's going to be in Mighty Avengers and things like that have been, you know, rumored. And I noticed that this is from, you know, the retailer side of things. Marvel sends out a newsletter every week. And it talks about different stuff like new second prints that are coming out and stuff that you have to get your orders in for and, you know, all of these, you know, different type of retailer information that you have to have. And one of the things that's going on right now is they started an Ultimate Collections backlist sale. And basically all of the Ultimate trade paperbacks and hardcovers in stock are being liquidated. and just flushed out of the system. And what I mean by flushed is, like, for instance, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man by Bendis Premium Hardcover Volume 1, normally $24.99. Your retailer, if they order it, they're usually getting, like, 50% off. You know, they're going to pay $12.49 for the book. It's clearance right now for $2.50.
Wow.
Premium hardcover.
That's for how much?
$2.50.
Wow.
Now, that's to the retailer.
That means you can still make a great profit and still sell it at a great discount.
Yeah, and there's a lot of them. Ultimate Comics Captain American Premium Hardcover, $2. Divided We Fall, United We Stand, which is the series that they just did last fall with the whole Civil War in the Ultimate Universe, that's normally $39.99. It's now $7.
Wow.
Iron Man Armor Wars Premium Hardcover, $1.50. You know, just also, and posters, Ultimates posters by different artists are $1.75, $1. Ultimate Fantastic Four trades are $1, $1.50. And I mean, this is, you know, I don't even know how many books there are. There's more than my screen and Gmail can show. Mm-hmm. I have to scroll through to get them. You know, Hawkeye, Iron Man, Spider-Man, Ultimates, X-Men, Ultimate War, Ultimate Three, Ultimates Villains, Ultimatum Companion, just like all of this stuff. Ultimatum Companion hardcover, normally $49.99. Right now it's $9 to retailers. Mm-hmm. So they are just flushing everything out. They just want to get rid of it, not have any of it in inventory anymore. So that's usually a sign that, you know, something is going away. You know, they'll do that with back issues of, like, Journey into Mystery. They'll clearance them out at, like, 80 cents or whatever just to get them, you know, out of the warehouses because, you know, the book is ending and whatever. So when you see, like, basically everything that's available in the Ultimate Universe is suddenly getting flushed out of the system, that's a pretty good indicator that that universe is going to buy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Going papa.
It's run its course.
Yeah. Like, I'm getting into it now, you know, and now it's going away.
I mean, for me, the only viable character right now is Miles Morales. And it's a shame that, you know, if they do fold him into the regular Marvel U, I don't know if it's going to be then, if he's going to remain as interesting, to be, you know, to be perfectly honest, because part of his story is that he's a legacy character.
Well, you know, but he's met Peter Parker already. So they've had that whole thing. And then part of the whole, you know, Age of Ultron is that the walls between the universes are weak and, you know, they've manipulated with time too much. And so you saw Galactus moving from the regular now into the Ultimate. So it's like those barriers are falling down and having those problems. So, you know, I don't think it's any big stretch to just see Miles Morales. But the problem is, part of what I like about Miles Morales is the characters around him. And that's part of the story. Like, I like what's going on with his dad right now in the book, you know, that relationship that they have. The way, you know, Gwen and Mary Jane are always kind of awkward about him. You know, his best friend who's always trying to, you know, push him to do more and get more involved. And, you know, all of that kind of stuff I really enjoy.
That's sort of what I meant by him being a legacy character, because he does have the backdrop in the characters in the background from the former Peter Parker, the deceased Peter Parker.
There's a lot of history. And you could even do, they could do an issue of Ultimate Spider-Man without Miles Morales in it at all and just focus on all those other characters, and it'd still be a book that I would read and would enjoy. You know what I mean? Like, if Miles Morales disappears for a month and everybody's, you know, it focuses on everybody else, all the C-list characters in the background, I think it'd still be an enjoyable read. So that book is just so well done, and I like everybody in it. So moving him, I mean, it kind of makes sense that if you're going to collapse the Ultimate Universe, he's the one guy you're going to save. But, you know, at the same time, it's sad for me to see it go.
I agree with that.
And it's funny because since Josh Fialkov took over and doing the whole Ultimates disassemble, and it seems, I have no idea what, I don't know the background for all these characters, but it seems interesting so far, so I'm digging it for that.
Yeah.
All right,
new X-Men. A couple of quick shots of news. If anyone's got anything else,
did you?
Yeah, just a couple of quick shots. One, I know we love busting on the Avengers having 20,000 titles in the franchise. They're about to DC is about to launch another Lantern book. It's going to be a Sinestro Corps ongoing book. And I kind of got a kick out of that. You know, it made me laugh that it's going to be six Green Lantern books. It's kind of
so fun. It's tied with Batman, right?
I have no idea. That's just a lot of books.
I think Batman has six now or something like that.
All right. And finally, another quick hit of news. Vin Diesel posted on Facebook that Marvel wants to talk to him, presumably about a movie role. Dun, dun, dun. What could it be?
It'll be the new Luke Cage.
Oh, I hope not.
No.
Classic's got some strong
points about that. He's going to be the new J. Jonah Jameson for the Amazing Spider-Man 3. You know, put a cigar in his mouth. Give him a flat top.
I know. Let's see.
You know what? Honestly, one thing I read online, I wouldn't mind seeing him do it. I wouldn't mind seeing him be the new Ben Grimm if Marvel was able to get, you know, the rights back.
Actually, you know what who'd be great cast as is the Scorpion, Matt Gargan.
That's a thought, too.
Yeah, if they do the Sinister Six, like it seems like they're heading in that direction for Amazing Spider-Man, you know, he can fit right in for part three, and maybe, you know, it's too late to put him a two on that. But who knows?
Yeah.
I'm right, also, reminded me that Blee and Cole had some supposed, you know, rumors of what's going to be announced at San Diego Comic-Con. So I can read that real quick. Supposedly, you know, Matt Fraction's Inhuman series going to be announced, where they take a Game of Thrones style to the book, where the family suspend the separate houses. A direct to DVD animated version of the new Geoff Johns and Jim Lee Justice League, and then Bruce Timm doing a new season for Justice League.
Oh, that'd be cool.
That would help me get over the loss of Young Justice.
Indeed.
What is this? DC's Weekly Comics, initially intended for late this year, the schedule has been put back in 2013. I guess that might going to be a comic, I suppose. Not sure what that is.
It sounds like it's similar to like when they did 52.
Right.
Like
52. Yeah, putting out something once a week. Yeah.
Once a week.
Okay. That was actually pretty cool. I really got into 52, you know, and going to the shop each week and guaranteed getting a DC book.
Well, you know, it reminds me of when Superman was a weekly, technically was a weekly in the mid-90s, where there were, you know, there were five books for a while, and they just did, like, Superman Unlimited, I think, or I don't remember what it was called, but it just came out on that fifth week. And so every week you could go in and get the next chapter of Superman, even though you were getting action and Superman and Adventures and Man of Steel, you know, it was that one big ongoing story. And I always enjoyed that. I always looked forward to that. So it just kind of depends, though, on who's in the book, because I don't know if I want to take every week of The Weather Wizard again, you know?
Yeah, I would think with the success of Man of Steel, they'll probably do a lot of Superman stories and, you know, maybe reintroduce Zod and do some things just to draw in the new readers, our wanted new readers.
They've also got the death of Wolverine. We know that Paul Cornell and Alan Davis are bringing us Killable, the idea of, you know, through his jaunts through time, Logan's healing power is damaged beyond repair.
And that's a movie tie-in.
He may become immortal again and die. The Sinestro Corps book that Agent 70 just announced. And supposedly there's going to be another DC supervillain monthly book that's supposed to spin out of the Forever Evil that's not Sinestro Corps related, because that's going to come out of the Lights Out event in the Green Lantern books. That's about it.
Cool.
And someone on Twitter, Roddy Cat on Twitter, said Vin Diesel equals Vision. He acts just as robotic in other movies.
I live my life a quarter mile at a time, man.
I hope they show some balls and put like a pot on his like a stew pot on his head, and he can be Four Brush Man.
I'd be fine if Vision never showed up in a Avengers movie because I don't really care about him.
Hey, this is kind of Vision related. Maybe someone can answer this for me real quick. What's this deal about the Vision having a brother? I was reading something recently where one of the characters saw the Vision and he was like, "Oh yeah, that's my brother." And I'm just sitting there going, "What?
What book was this?"
It's the upcoming Avengers AI.
Have you read it yet?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But one of the guys is like, "Oh yeah, the Vision's my brother," and I'm like, "Is this new, or is this the first time this has popped up? Is this old news?"
It might be a retcon, considering all the Age of Ultron stuff. You never know.
Yes,
I wouldn't be surprised if it was a retcon. We'll see.
Yeah, I'll check that out this weekend.
Yeah, and the rest of us will see next week.
Yes.
I think he means brother, like Hulk Hogan meets brother, like hey
brother, TNGI bro. Gotcha.
Exactly. Right.
With that, we can head on to this week's book.
Long list of books.
Let's do. Let's see. Jump into. Is there anything in Dark Horse related comics anyone want to bring up? I hear good things about Mind, MGMT, and The Massive, but I don't read them, so...
Nope.
Mind Management is one of those that I plan on sitting down and reading at some point. I just haven't had a time.
Oh, that's what that stands for, Management.
Yeah. Oh, there's a band, Management, MGMT.
Cool. All right, let's go straight to DC. Let's knock these books out. First up... I'll go as we hear.
That's a lot of
class is doing over there. Choking out his drink. We hear every chug classic, just to let you know.
All right, well, if we're jumping into DC, we should probably just go straight to the top of the pile and start talking about the Batman Superman.
Oh, I thought we were going to do alphabetical. All right, go ahead.
We can, but let's start with Batman Superman first.
All right.
So this was drawn by Jay Lee and Greg Pak as writing duties. This is supposed to take place pre Justice League, right?
Right. This is
supposed to be the first meeting.
Yeah, the first interaction between Bruce Wayne and Clark Kent. So
I have a first complaint, and that complaint is that Jay Lee couldn't even draw the whole book. Now, can you finish the first issue? That's good of him. And it's funny, I actually liked his art on this. I haven't seen a Jay Lee book drawn in so long. I didn't know what to expect. And the preview images.
Let's just talk over each other.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he did Ozymandias, the Before Watchmen title.
Oh, okay.
And one of the things in that book was he tried to change his style in that book to fit kind of that Art Deco architectural style of what was going on in Ozymandias' world and have that fit with like the page layouts and the panels and everything. And some of that has carried over into this, where you can see on a lot of pages he's dealing with the architecture of Gotham City and the way Gotham City has that kind of weird look to it. And he's laid out a lot of the panels that same way. I've never been a huge Jay Lee fan. The only book that I really liked him before this was Gunslinger or Dark Tower stuff that he was doing, the Stephen King adaptations. Mm-hmm. I don't really like him on superhero books for the most part because I just don't think he does the whole – capes and tights thing as well as a lot of other people. But I have to say this book for what it was, I think he did a great job. Normally I would look at a book and be like, Jay Lee, I don't know. But I enjoyed this book enough and I liked the way that he is, incorporating the architectural styles and the way he's doing his page layouts. And he's got a 2-page spread that's basically – like the Superman diamond at the top and the Batman bat at the bottom, and the panels are kind of radiating out. He just does a lot of really interesting stuff on there. And it never detracted from the story. It never distracted from the story. It was always, you know, really laid out in such a way that your eye is moving along through the page following the panel. So, you know, normally I would pass on a Jay Lee book, but I read this one. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to the next one.
I think the colors, whoever colored it, helped it a lot. Because the color, it looked so painted.
Mm-hmm.
The art style was what I liked about it. It would have been nice if he finished the entire issue, but, well, I guess like the last five pages he didn't do, or seven, something like that. But not sure who the villain is, and I guess it seemed like there was time travel involved. I guess I totally had forgot that supposedly Batman and Superman are supposed to be going to Earth 2. So maybe that's why things got weird at the end. But
well, there's the villain is some sort of like demon or ghost or, you know, something. It has a little mix of Dead Man and Mixleplick mixed together. So Mixlepidlick, whatever his name is, mixed together. So as far as I know, this may be a new villain that we haven't seen before. So that also kind of makes it interesting, because being, you know, New 52, you want to see new stuff and not just the same stuff rehashed and told again through, you know, just because it's New 52, they can do the same stuff over again. You know, I like seeing new stuff in it. So I enjoyed that one a lot.
Okay. I'm going to jump back to alphabetical order again. All-Star Western 21. I haven't been reading it, and I didn't read this one yet, but I'm going to try it, give it a try.
Not here.
I did.
I didn't read it here.
So did you like it, Dirt?
This issue, he runs into Batwing. Basically, Booster Gold disappeared at one point in the past in Justice League International. He reappears in All-Star Western in the past in Gotham City of, you know, 1879 or whatever it's supposed to be. And he pops Jonah Hex to the future. And so Jonah Hex finds himself in Gotham City in modern time. And so, of course, you know, Batwing shows up. And the first thing Batwing notices is here's this crazy-looking guy wearing a Confederate Army uniform. And he's, you know, pretty offended by it. So he goes to take him in. And the guy mentions Arkham, because Jonah Hex has been fighting with, you know, everybody in old Gotham. And Abraham Arkham, I think was his name, is the original, you know, founder of the city and whatever. And so he mentions that this guy's crazy like Arkham. And Batwing hears him say Arkham, so he realizes that he must have escaped from Arkham Asylum. And so he ends up having Jonah Hex committed to the insane asylum. And so if you're a guy from, you know, 130 years ago and you suddenly find yourself in the present, how do you explain to people that you're not crazy?
Right.
You know, so I'm kind of looking forward to see what they do with that storyline too.
Yeah, I like because Paul Miatti and Gray writing it, and I like their Batwing, so I figured I'd give this a shot. I'll get to it this weekend.
Well, and they've been doing Jonah Hex for a long time, because they were doing the old Jonah Hex series before the New 52.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So now doing, you know, All-Star Western, they're doing Jonah Hex. They took over Batwing, so they're dealing with him. So now the two books, you know, converge. It's characters that they're working with on both ends of the spectrum. So it didn't feel, you know, too cheesy, I guess, to have them come together, you know.
And I always wonder how those two-team write-in groups work. I'm used to just one person doing the write-in, but working in tandem, that's got to be nice.
They've been working together for years.
Yeah. Okay. Next book, Aquaman 21. I know Classic said he read it.
Yeah, and it's good to have Paul Pelletier back on the art and back to the main story with the resurfacing of the first King of Atlantis. What can I say? This is, you know, still one of my favorite books to read, not just because it's Aquaman, but, you know, just the story of Atlantis and, you know, the whole royalty going, you know, angle going on down there. And, you know, things continue to develop with his wife, Mira, and these new characters and the Reed and the Bermuda Triangle and all these other things happening. So, you know, great story, great cliffhanger for the ending there for the next issue. Pick this up.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. Next up, we have Batman the Dark Knight. Anyone keeping up with that book?
Nope.
I have it. I just haven't read it yet. I just haven't had time. But the one nice thing is Ethan Van Sciver is back doing the pencils in this issue. He did like the first part of the story, and then they had someone else come in to the next couple parts of the story, and then he's back to wrap it up. So I'm looking forward to reading it. It's all about the Mad Hatter and the Mad Hatter, his place in the New 52 in the DC universe.
Right.
He's one of those characters that never really got, a whole lot of attention. He's always kind of a B-list character, and they've more or less turned him into the Joker in this universe, taking the place of the Joker from the old universe, because the Joker in the New 52 is completely different and crazy in a different way. So he seems to kind of fill the spot that the Joker had before. So it's got a fun vibe to it.
Okay.
All right.
Catwoman 21. I haven't got to it yet, which might be a trend for the show.
Anybody? Bueller?
Nope. Okay.
Has anybody been, have you read Catwoman regularly?
Another podcaster, Eclectic, of the Eclectic Discussion podcast, he's been saying how great Catwoman is. So I said, okay, I'll try it out. I read issue 20, and it was okay. And I said I was going to read the annual, but I didn't. But I'm going to read this one, and we'll see if it stays on the reading list or if it falls off like Teen Titans and Fantastic Four and FF did. So, yeah, I'm not sure yet. I don't have an opinion on the book yet.
It's not ending anytime soon. That's something we know from the JLA book.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I have another book I haven't got to be yet, but we'll get to that when we get to Justice League titles.
All right, what you got?
Flash 21.
I skimmed this for academic purposes, and and it's basically half the book is this iteration of Kid Flash running away from Barry Allen, and Barry just wants to talk to him, and this Kid Flash doesn't want anything to do with them, and don't talk to me, blah. It's just a big brat, and he's running away, and it's just very little development toward, in the story, towards the Reverse Flash, which is where it's all going. That's what this story is called. So, minimal development. Let's put it that way in the story.
Okay. Green
that's
team.
That's not like a sidekick to run away from the hero.
No, he's not a sidekick.
Yeah, no, he's definitely not a sidekick. And they even referenced that Kid Flash in the New 52 took the Flash's name without anybody's permission. He just took it.
Okay. Green Team Teen Trillionaires number 2, which I totally forgot about this book.
And again, it was a fun book. It was a good read. Kind of what they're focusing, the first issue kind of focused on like these inventors, guys who had a lot of money, trying to figure out all of their, what they can do with their money and the gadgets they can buy and try to, buy themselves into being heroes. In this book, basically this one, trillionaire's girlfriend is like the Paris Hilton of the DC universe. She's completely stupid. She's totally self-absorbed, she kind of resents everything that's going on with him wanting to be a hero. So you get some development with them, but then the book ends with her being infected by this kind of cyborg, I don't know if it's like a cybernetic virus is the idea behind it or whatever, but her body is starting to turn robotic. And so you can see on the cover, she's got that robot arm. So it's like suddenly, you know, she's best known for her looks and everything like that. And now it's like her body is starting to work against her. So it's a character that you start out totally hating this character, and then it ends and you kind of maybe feel a little sympathetic for her. You just kind of have to see how they continue to play with it.
Nice. Yeah, I'm looking. Like I said, I totally forgot this book came out this week, so got to make sure I hunt it down. Justice League 21. This does not as well. I haven't finished it yet. I'm halfway through it, but I'm assuming that it doesn't start the Justice League. It's actually finishing the Shazam backup story.
Right.
So, although he's set to be one of the key characters of the Justice League, so. I mean, that's part of the whole. And apparently his involvement has something to do with Trinity War as well. So kind of doing all of that.
Being magic-based.
Yeah.
You know, especially with Pandora being kind of central to that. So.
And I got to say, Gary Frank doing the entire book is gorgeous.
Yes, that was. I definitely wanted to mention that Gary Frank's art was very, you know, it was very well done in this. It was a nice change of pace.
He had a run on Action Comics several years ago with Jeff Johns, and I remember every issue of that was just a treat to read because of how well it's done. And again, you know, reading this book, I've never been the biggest fan of Shazam, as he's now called. Mm-hmm. But I have to say that I've enjoyed the backup stories as it went along. You were supposed to kind of hate Billy Batson. That was the point. They totally wanted to, you know, change his character and have him start out as someone you don't like and then have him turn sympathetic. And a lot of people were upset that he was, you know, this brat basically at the beginning. But I think they've done a really good job with this story of, you know, fleshing him out into a better character and showing how he changes over time. And this final issue with him versus Black Adam, it's kind of funny because it looks almost like Black Adam may have died at the end of this issue. So I'm not sure.
That was kind of weird.
I don't know if his magic is going to go to somebody else and there's going to be a new Black Adam or what the deal is. But, yeah, they kind of just turned him into dust at the end of this issue. So I'm interested to see what happens.
He'll probably reappear, I think. You know, he's such a major, you know, everyone sees him as the arch enemy in this particular case that it probably won't be very long until we see him again.
Yeah, I'd see him again or see someone else with his power.
That's true. That's one way to do it.
I like this Shazam family.
Yeah, the group of orphan kids, the Newsboy Legion, basically.
Yeah, all these kids with that turned and got themselves grown up bodies and powers.
Yeah. And I also like the idea that they were all a little different. Like their powers manifested differently within them. You know, one of them who loves gadgets and was always playing with electronics, he now has the ability to talk to machines. You know, he can talk to electronics and talk to machines, and that's his power. So it's not like everybody is just a clone of Shazam. Everyone is going to, you know, kind of deal with their power differently. And so I'd like that idea as well.
Okay. Justice League Dark 21.
Didn't read it.
I haven't been keeping up with Justice League Dark, but I'm going to give this issue a try just to prepare myself for Trinity War before it starts. So,
although I kind of wonder, I just kind of skimmed through it when I was doing the inventory on all the new books this week, and it felt more like this was the end of a storyline to kind of clean things out so they could start Trinity War. So I almost wonder if reading this isn't really going to do you very much, if maybe you need to go back like 2 or 3 months, you know, to read all those before you get into it.
No, not more reading. All right. Next up, we have Justice League of America, number 5.
Haven't read it yet. There's one big I told you so in this.
Why? What'd you tell us?
Well, I guess we can spoil it for Tim Dog.
I mean, I know she's not dead.
Right. But how they did it?
I'm assuming from the 5-page preview that they released earlier this week, I'm assuming that was Martian Manhunter.
That's right. I told you so.
Yeah.
We can go to the videotape if you don't believe me.
I don't believe you.
I enjoyed it overall. I don't think in general I like America as much as regular Justice League. But I did like seeing how they all their roles are kind of starting to flesh out a little bit better. You can see how they all do kind of work together as a team and have different ideas. I have to say, though, I wasn't a huge fan with the artwork because it's Brett Booth. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Hey.
It wasn't that bad. I thought it definitely was. It definitely looked a lot sharper and cleaner than the Nightwing stuff that he's putting out right now. I think he's definitely putting in more. He put more effort onto this book than the recent Nightwing stuff.
Read some a comment from earlier when we were talking about Vision. Roddy Cat again. As he said, Vision, Brain Patterns, parentheses, most regarded version, were based off Wonder Man's when he died. So 1D deemed them brother, WCA era.
Huh.
I don't know who WCA is.
West Coast Avengers.
Oh. There you go.
Yep.
And my brother, Adam Black, says Justice League was very well done. Gary Frank did an awesome job. I think Shazam may be a good ongoing series as long as Johns is on the title. Also, the Wizard Shazam is partially responsible for creating the Trinity of Sin. Black Adam dying, I don't approve. Which, of course, is where he got his name from.
Yeah, so he doesn't want to believe it. He'll fight that one to the death.
He also asks, is Brett Booth going to be the ongoing penciler for JLA? No, because... Brett Booth, he's moving to something else. He's actually leaving his Nightwing last week was his last Nightwing issue. But didn't when Green Lantern 21 ended, didn't Geoff Johns put in the back of it that Doug Mackey was coming with him over to Justice League? I think so.
You could be right.
Yeah. I think Doug Mackey's going to eventually be the ongoing for Justice League of America. And Brett Booth is going to move on. I'm assuming there's probably some new book that hasn't been announced yet. So we shall see. Next up, Larfleeze number one of the six Green Lantern books.
Does anybody expect this book to last?
Yes, because it's a Green Lantern book.
Yeah, but, I mean, technically this is the same story that was in Threshold. They just canceled Threshold.
And yeah, I was going to say, they're just moving over. They're moving it from...
Mine. No. Mine. That's all I see on that cover.
If I actually was
reading Threshold... He's Daffy Duck.
If I was reading Threshold, I would have known.
He's Daffy Duck. You guys know from the old school Looney Tunes. Mine. No.
We know who Daffy is.
No, but that particular cartoon.
The cover?
Yeah, no, but just, you know, I can just see him saying that because it says, it's subtitled, this book's all mine. So I just hear him saying, no, mine.
I don't know. I look at this book and I just, I don't know anybody who's excited for a Larfleeze ongoing title. Like, I know people who are Green Lantern fans and, you know, a Sinestro Corps book. I can definitely see people going, oh, wow, I'd like to read, you know, some stories with Sinestro. That'd be cool. I just don't know anybody who's sitting there going, oh, boy, I loved Threshold so much. Too bad they canceled it. Good thing Larfleeze is getting an ongoing series.
And then because Larfleeze just had a backup in Threshold, right? I only read Threshold number one when it came out, and he had a backup in that.
Okay.
That's all I know. But yeah, I definitely would read a Sinestro Corps ongoing book. The next title on the list, Red Lanterns, I haven't been reading, but I'm kind of interested to see this whole thing with Guy Gardner joining the team. So I'm going to check that out. I doubt I stay on it, but I'll check it out. But yeah, Larfleeze does nothing for me.
Yeah, with... you know, all their changes that they're doing with issue 21s of all the Green Lantern books, You know, Core got new writer, new artist. Green Lantern got new writer, new artist. Mm-hmm. Red Lanterns, I haven't had a chance to check it out yet, but it's definitely on my list to check out this weekend because I am interested in giving it a shot now that it's kind of getting a new focus and changing a little bit.
New jumping on point.
Yeah.
Yeah, so at this point, while all the Lantern books have their own, all the color spectrum have their own ongoing series.
The Indigo Tribe book would be boring. It's just like a dude sitting around in a hippie drum circle for 5 hours.
What's the difference between Indigo and Sapphire color? Aren't they both purple?
No, Indigo's blue, so... I forget what they're... are they like the peaceful or the hopeful ones, or...?
Yeah.
Well... Technically, indigo is the color between blue and violet on the color spectrum.
Right.
And it's, as far as like light goes in color, it's considered its own kind of base color. But as far as, you know, when you take pigments and paints and whatever and try to create the color, it really doesn't stand out on its own. But there's something about the wavelength that makes it scientifically stand out like the other colors. But if you ask most people indigo, they're going to look at indigo and say it's either blue or say it's purple. So, right.
But yeah, in terms of their lantern, you know, what they draw upon, what is it that they get their power from? I forget.
Star Sapphires are love.
Right. I remember that one I remember, but in terms of the Indigo Tribe, I can't remember.
Indigo is a Wikipedia. Is it red. Hope?
What is
Indigo Tribe Hope? Is that what they are?
No, maybe. That's blue is hope. Indigo is I don't know what they are. Sapphire is love. I don't know.
Whatever.
Oh man, Wikipedia is failing me right now.
While you're checking Wikipedia, we have Red Lanterns 21.
Red Lanterns, anyone?
As Bueller? The cover says, Guy Gardner something.
Guy Gardner is becoming a Red Lantern.
Traitor to the Core. Haha, the Core. CoreCorp.
Okay, Indigo Tribe is compassion.
Oh.
So slightly different from love.
It's in between hope and love is compassion.
Right.
Oh, Adam Black has said something. He says, I wanted a Larfleas title as much as I wanted a Legion ongoing title.
Hey, you got both. Congratulations. Oh, wait, they're canceling Legion, aren't they?
Yeah. I want to say, I thought he actually was a Legion fan. Are you a Legion fan, Adam Black? Let me know.
Yeah, the thing is that...
isn't that a Legion character on the... cover Larfleas, number one?
Brainiac 5.
But yeah, it's not.
Is that Brainiac 5? It's not.
No. I think that's the guy from House 2 that was hiding underneath the staircase.
Oh.
But no, I loved Legion back in the day, but when they did Zero Hour and they rebooted everything, I just couldn't get into it again. And I was hoping with the new 52 that they would restart it. And I was real excited for it, and it turned out to just be a continuation of what they had before. Like, there was no change in the Legion of Superheroes. Like, the new 52 didn't echo, you know, down the time stream to them. So I was like, nah, I'm not even going to get into it. Okay. Nor Larfleas. All right, so what's next?
Next up is Superman 21.
Hector Hammond.
You know, I don't read Superman.
I read the last issue. I wanted to get to this one. Maybe I'll get to it over the weekend. For academic purposes.
Who's the writer on Superman?
Lobdell. Scott Lobdell.
Is he staying on the book?
No one knows. As far as I know. I mean, I haven't heard any big plans for anybody jumping on the book, so.
Okay.
He's been fine. There's been nothing that's really stood out as being incredibly awesome, but at the same time, there's nothing that stood out as being so terrible, except for maybe this cover. So, I don't really like. I don't hate it, but I don't love it either. You know.
Adam Black said, "Legion of the X-Men Legacy title." Oh, Legion. Legion from David Holler. I get it.
Not the Legion of Superheroes.
Yeah, why is that book still going? I really can't let yet. Anyway, actually, Comixology has a sale tomorrow, I think, of X-Men Legacy titles for 99 cents. I'm assuming it's the old pre-Marvel Now X-Men Legacy.
Overpriced.
My headset falls off. Next book. Talon number 9. I haven't read, but I will.
Not here either.
And it tied into Birds of Prey, which, did that come out last week? I don't keep up with Birds of Prey.
Couldn't tell you.
Idea.
I need to, because I want to read those, since they're tied together, I want to read both of them. So I got to see if I missed it or not.
You want to read them both just because they tie together, or because you read Talon, so now you want to read Birds of Prey, or you normally read Birds of Prey, so now you're going to read Talon?
I read Talon, but it crosses over into Birds of Prey, so I want to read it. Birds of Prey now to see how it ties together. Oh, Adam Black, more comments. He says, I always hated Hector Hammond as a villain. Hated in capital letters. Teen Titans number 21.
Nope.
I like the cover, though. If Doug gets it up.
Yeah, right here.
Yeah, I saw it in the show notes, or the when you upload all those images. I was like, hey, that looks kind of nice.
Although, I mean, I have not kept up with Teen Titans. Who's the lady with the black smoke head?
Some new character they created.
Oh, okay.
No idea.
Who I don't know the name of. Wait, number 2.
I read this because I was pretty impressed with the first issue of The Wake. It kind of went into it's starting to become a little bit formulaic. But I wanted to mention that the mysteries deepen, no pun intended, because they're, you know, deep underwater. And, basically it's still worth reading. I'm willing to give it one more issue to see if Snyder does anything kind of different with this, because I can sort of see where this is going, but I hope it doesn't go that way. Hopefully Snyder keeps us all on our toes.
Yeah, well, I read the first one and I enjoyed it, and I was going to read the second one, but people have added it to their pull list, so all of our subscribers got all the copies and we didn't have any.
Oh, there are a few. Oh, okay, you didn't have any left over.
So, yeah, I didn't have a chance to read one, so.
I guess that's a good problem to have.
Yeah, I mean, Vertigo books have really fallen in the last, year or so, and I think it's probably because Karen Berger, who's the editor, stepped down, and so they had to transition to somebody else. So a lot of stuff kind of like went on hold, and New 52, took Constantine away and shut down Hellblazer, which was their long-running ongoing, and, you know, Swamp Thing is not a part of Vertigo anymore, so it's kind of having this, you know, period where it has to kind of rebrand itself and kind of refigure out, you know, Sweet Tooth ended, and all this stuff kind of ended and nothing new has really filled in its place. So right now they're doing a lot of these, you know, creator owned kind of short series, kind of hoping to get stuff going. But I think Unwritten their only ongoing right now?
I'm not sure. I see that came out this week, right?
Couldn't tell you.
Yeah, and I think that may be the only. Because I guess Fables. Fables is still going.
Is the backbone of their publishing, I think.
Yeah, and Unwritten even ties into Fables. Which Fables is, everybody talked about it, so I tried reading it and I just couldn't get into it. So
I think I'm going to skip The Wake.
It might be one of those.
One more issue. You know, give it a shot if you agree with me. That, you know, you can sort of see where this is going. You know, it's a 10-issue limited series, so it's not that big a commitment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It may also end up being one of those, though, where because it is Vertigo and because it's a limited series, it may play itself out better reading it all as one big story as opposed to reading it as a monthly.
True enough.
I've never read a Vertigo book, so the imprint has no special place in my heart. I just read it because it's the team of Snyder and Sean Murphy, and it's something about an underwater world, and something happened, I guess. There's no powers in it, so, you know, it hasn't kept my attention. Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to skip Dynamite unless someone has anything from there they want to bring up. I heard a bunch of stuff about this Uncanny book that came out, Uncanny Number One.
Anybody?
Nope. For those wondering, the Classic had to leave us, so we're down to three people tonight.
The only thing that kind of caught my attention is that Uncanny is written by Andy Diggle, and he did The Losers for Vertigo, which, you know, became a movie. I mean, he's done a bunch of other stuff too, but I really enjoyed that one. So it's one of those that I'll probably get to at some point, but it's also Dynamite, so it's kind of at the bottom of my list, you know?
Okay. On to IDW. Where I'm just going to jump to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, number 23.
Oh, you jumped over Godzilla, Rulers of the Earth, number one.
Yes, I did. But
I read it.
Can you tell us about Godzilla?
I just wanted to give a quick review of this. It's the latest miniseries from IDW for the first issue. It's paced very well, and it leads into a fight that most Godzilla fans have seen, given short shrift in the movie Godzilla Final Wars, which was the last Toho, production of Godzilla. They wanted to give the character about a 10-year break, and that's why we're getting a new Godzilla movie in 2014. It's interesting. It's kind of formulaic at the same time. It's, you know, they come up with another reason for all these monsters to fight. But the art is pretty good, and if you just wanted to see a slightly more comic booky take on Godzilla and the monsters, you can pick this up. It's definitely not as detailed as Stoko's art in Half Century War, but it's still pretty well done. Well-rounded.
Isn't this one based more around the giant monsters fighting as opposed to like the regular Godzilla? I could not get into because it was just like humans running in terror as this giant monster is going around. It's like, who cares about the people? Like, I don't, people get squished. Who cares?
Right.
This is the big, like, WWE monster throwdown comic, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's where this is going. It's sort of what I mentioned before. It's, at least this first issue is leading into a knockdown, dragout fight in the second issue. So let's hope that they keep this focus on the monsters fighting, and maybe it'll be worth keeping up with.
Okay.
TMNT. Go ahead.
TMNT number 23. City Fall Part 2.
I didn't get a chance to read it.
I'm trying to remember now. I read it so long ago. I read it last weekend. So the turtles are—they're trying to figure out their game plan to get Leo back. The foot do some hocus pocus stuff on Leo. A lot of it is him hallucinating stuff, and that's about it.
Did you read the original Eastman and Laird series when it came out a long time ago?
The only thing I have is a bunch of TMNT graphic novels from Eastman and Laird.
Is it like the collections?
One of them is like when I remember. I wonder if I have them here at the parents' house. But one of them is like they find the Foot Clan, and then they get transported to, I guess, one of those other dimensions, and they fight. This is back when they all had the red bandana.
Well, because the reason why I ask is that this being City War and kind of the Foot making this big push against the Turtles, it reminds me of in the original series,
City at War.
Yeah. Where, Shredder comes back and the Foot attack, and that's where the big moments that were in the first movie, like where April O'Neil's antique shop burns down, and you think was it Raphael or Mike? I don't remember.
Man, got put in like a coma type thing.
Yeah, yeah, and so it kind of reminds me like this is kind of mirroring that in the original run.
So when they got that from the movie from that City at War.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, the first movie did a really good job of kind of sticking true to what a lot of Eastman and Laird comics. But, you know, the second one had Vanilla Ice and the third one was Samurai. So they kind of lost it after the first movie.
They said they had to come up with their own original story. Go, ninja, go, ninja, go. Image books now. Bounce number 2, which I had plans to read, and then I had plans to read it early, but then the Marvel and DC stuff came out Wednesday, so got pushed to the side.
There's a ton of Marvel and DC stuff.
Yes.
So are we on Marvel yet?
So Bounce number 2, I will get there just 1 second. Bounce number 2, I skipped, and I was going to read this Lazarus number 1, but
I wanted to mention that. That was something I actually had on my list of academic reading, so I'm going to get to that. Hopefully we'll have reviews of it next week.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I'll probably still read it this weekend. It just got pushed aside once other stuff came out. I did read Jupiter's Legacy number 2, though, and I enjoyed it more than the first issue. The opening is funny. It's whatever the main hero... was Utopia, whatever his freaking name is. He, his son, the drunkard, sort of lazy bum kid, and another kid of a superhero, they're trying to carry the ship. Instead of having the ship go through the water, they're trying to, telepathically carry it to where it needs to go. And there's this whole thing about, the main hero's son, the screw-up, he's talking too much and distracting the guy trying to help the ship up, and the ship starts tinkering to one side. He's like, dude, straighten it up. And, like, the ship's like turning sideways, and it's kind of funny. And I don't want to get spoiled too much, but there's some plotting and scheming going on with some of the characters now. So the story's moving along.
I did like in the first issue how they, like, you always have that idea of, like, why doesn't Superman just go in and take over and fix something, you know?
Even if it's, like, the government, huh?
Right. And so they're dealing with that, at least, you know, kind of... That's the whole point of this book, is kind of dealing with some of that stuff. And so it's at least interesting, but I'm just not... I don't know, there's something about this book that just feels off, and I can't quite put my finger on it. Maybe once the third issue comes out, I can get it, but I don't know if it's just the... Maybe it's the pacing of it. It just felt like there was a whole lot of not a lot going on in this issue. There's a lot of talking, you know, and I guess if you're getting into some of these discussions of, you know, how far should you take your power and whatever, fine. But it almost seems like this is comics. They should be telling that story by example, not by conversation, you know?
Okay. All right, what's next? Marvel is next. Jump to the good stuff.
Maybe not the good stuff this week, but definitely the voluminous stuff this week.
Oh, yeah, that's better, because, man.
There's a lot.
See how quickly we can get through this. Age of Ultron number 10, AI. Worthless. Do not read this.
I read this so you
don't have to.
It was nice that they gave Pym a fresh start in this, and... You know, I don't think they've ever told Pym's origin anywhere, so it's nice to
read. Nobody cared.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's the whole point of this, is that this and Age of Ultron was meant to boost people into, you know, to give people a reason to care. And like I said on last week's episode, this is all, you know, groundwork for the movie, for the Ant-Man movie, because I'm presuming that it's going to be Pym and not Scott Lang or... whoever the guy was that stole the Ant-Man stuff for the recent stuff. You know what I'm talking about? I forget who that guy was, like some crook or something.
Scott Lang?
No, after that.
who cares?
Right, but I think that's what they're doing, is that they're laying the groundwork for an Ant-Man movie, and Hank, you know, and giving, you know, Hank Pym something to do, and
just like giving him this Avengers book, which will eventually get canceled.
It'll probably peter out within 10 issues,
just like 15. His Mighty Avengers did.
Right, that's right. I agree.
So it's a Hank Pym origin story, and supposedly it's supposed to transition over to Avengers AI and show how some whatever with the technology taking over in the Marvel Universe and him trying to stop it. But this issue, you know, is written by Mark Waid, who's a great writer. I didn't see the point of it. It doesn't, like, no threat is shown in this issue at all.
The only thing this really does is make Hank Pym into
more of a sympathetic
character. Yeah, I was going to say, he's a sympathetic character. It shows him as a child, and he can outthink the adults, so you know he's got a higher level intelligence. It shows him, you know, with the Pym particles, he can become big, he can become small, and he, you know, messes around with both, but doesn't really find a whole lot of success with either. And, you know, you like the guy. You know, you get to the end of the issue, and you're, you know, he's a nice enough guy, but I still don't know that I care about reading any sort of ongoing series about him.
Got a good question from Rowdy Cat, who's watching live, obviously. It says, now, would Age of Ultron have made any difference if it had happened when it was originally scheduled? You said you didn't like the time. Yeah, I'd always been complaining that I said this got pushed out of the way once they decided to do the Avengers versus X-Men. If it took place when it was, this is a question I have. If this was the intended outcome of Avengers or of Age of Ultron, I still wouldn't have liked it.
I think they changed the entire ending.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's going to be the second part.
I think the original ending would have gone into, you know, whatever they did is the reason why the Phoenix power came back. And that would have led into the AVX. I think Age of Ultron, they destroy the timeline, they rebuild the timeline, and somehow that reignites the Phoenix power, which then comes back to Earth, which sets off that whole storyline, and that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas in this, it's they destroy the timeline, they rebuild the timeline, and now Hank Pym gets his own book. Like, I don't like that. That payoff is not the same.
And then they decide at the last minute, yeah, this we can use this to kill the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, we can throw in Angela, you know,
and throw in Angela. Adam Black says, tweet went away. Age of Ultron 10 AI was the biggest hype for nothing. Ooh, Hank Pym is smart. Big deal. Oh, and Roddy Cat says Eric O'Grady was the other Ant-Man.
Thank you.
Irredeemable.
Thank you. Shout out to Roddy Cat.
Yes. At Roddy Cat on Twitter. Okay, so yeah, we've tried. Yeah, I like that thought pattern. Because, yes, that's what I was going to say. It seemed like they changed, especially when they said Brian Hitch drew the first five, and then they decided to switch artists because the story, quote unquote, the story changes. It's because Brian Hitch drew these issues like 2 years ago, and then they decided to probably jettison whatever else he had drawn for it.
Well, yeah, because I would almost bet that the second half of the story was drawing in the X-Men. So that you would have, it would also make sense for having like Uncanny X-Men eventually. Uncanny Avengers, you know, eventually grow out of everything, because Avengers and X-Men would work together to try to fix everything and destroy Ultron and put the timeline back. And then suddenly they had to, you know, kind of unweave that and redo it. So.
And it seems like I remember, I'm not 100% sure, I'm about like 75% sure I remember reading this, but it seems like I remember reading that Brian Hitch was like sort of pissed off at Marvel for how they decided to do this series and make their changes. I remember reading that somewhere. He wasn't happy with the changes they decided to make. So that's enough of that. It's gone to a good book. All New X-Men number 13. So Bendis, this is my favorite Bendis-written book, right ahead of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man.
I like I'm still on Ultimate. Ultimate's still better.
It's close. I'll give it that. It's a toss-up. I could take either one. What I found, see, if it wasn't so many books out this week, I probably wouldn't have wrote a review of this one, just because I like that they frequently showed the Havoc mutant speech from Uncanny Avengers number 4, I think it was, which came months ago. So it's just funny me trying to like tie out the continuity together. So Havoc gave that speech that took place in Uncanny Avengers 4. Uncanny Avengers 4 takes place at the same time as Ultimate All New X-Men, I guess 12 and 13 and probably 14, because as I stated, Havoc gave the speech that morning, and then went out with the Uncanny Avengers and hunted down the All New X-Men and found them by nighttime, and all this took place within like 6 issues of like 2 combined books.
Decompression.
Yes, Marvel continuity. But yeah, it's the typical Bendis book, very wordy, but for some reason I like his wordy stuff on the X-Men. I never read his Avengers stuff, so I don't know what he did with them pre-Marvel now.
I think it kind of depends on how much humor he's allowed to do, because Ultimate Spider-Man always has that kind of lighthearted tone to it, and All New X-Men has had that lighthearted tone to it. But when he did stuff like Mighty Avengers, it was like the, you know, Luke Cage is always no sense of humor, you know? Mm. So the only thing they could really do to have fun with it is he introduced Squirrel Girl. So there was like some girl in a squirrel outfit who had squirrel powers or whatever, and it was like
Squirrel Girl.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's like all he could do for humor in that one. When he's allowed to let people have these fun conversations, it's like the Tarantino thing. You know, Tarantino just takes plots from other movies and makes his movies out of them, but he adds his own dialogue, and it's the snappy Tarantino dialogue that makes him interesting.
Adam Black says Age of Ultron was not an Avengers story, but a Wolverine story, plus Captain America got his fucking head blown off. And let's not forget that Black Panther fell down and snapped his neck.
Oh, God.
And the Hulk obliterated Taskmaster.
Incredible. Oh, my God.
Age of Ultron, everybody. Someone else got their head blown off, too. Was it She-Hulk? Something nasty happened to She-Hulk, I remember.
Yeah.
She got that haircut. That was what was terrible.
And then Luke Cage has, like, a receding hairline. Good times. Mm-hmm. Avengers Arena number 11. I read that. It was okay. It mostly dealt with Hazmat and Reptile.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Nothing really happened in the issue.
It's like Hazmat and Reptile hanging out on the beach, eating shark cooked over an open fire. That's
pretty much. That's what it
was. Pretty much what was going on.
Captain America number 8. I haven't read it.
I read it. You know what's funny about this? Zola in this kind of reminds me of Saruman from Lord of the Rings. I know. Who is it that doesn't like magic?
Me.
Yeah, Tim, I knew you wouldn't get this reference. Dirtmite. You know,
it definitely, Lord of the Rings.
Definitely reminds me of Saruman from Lord of the Rings, creating an orc army to destroy men. Except Zola wants to create the world and all humans, wants to change all the humans into his own image. So, you know, this episode, this issue has Cap versus Ian / Leopold to the death. And there's a surprise apparent guest star at the end. So we'll see what happens in the next issue. I'm glad this storyline is winding up.
I still don't understand what the point of the story has been. Like, to jettison Captain America away and have him be gone for 10 years, but yet he's obviously back and still active right now in the regular Marvel Universe. So obviously at some point in the story, he's going to reset. Or, you know, he's sitting in a matrix tube somewhere and they're going to turn it off. And this whole 10-year thing has been 30 seconds.
Right, in real time.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about this that just isn't making sense and doesn't work out.
Right. I think I think what Remender wanted to I think what Remender wanted to do was just, you know, in his own way, explore the character. And I don't know if it's been that effective. I think it's taken too long. I think this is something he could have done in 5 or 6 issues, not in 10
or 3
or 11. No, yeah, but like I mean, the whole point is he could have done it in a lot shorter time period.
Probably in 6 issues, this could have all been done. Okay.
Yeah, now we're on 8, and it's still building to the end. You know,
Daredevil 27. Haven't read it.
I read this. This was excellent. It's Daredevil versus Bullseye and Ikari. Just very quickly, without spoiling anything, it's a pretty well choreographed fight comic book. It has just lots of great scenes in this. It's well played by Mark Waid. And it's definitely worth the read. It's the finale to this whole, you know, Bullseye influenced interference in Daredevil's life.
Okay. I look forward to it this weekend.
Definitely worth the read.
Deadpool number 12.
Didn't get around to it.
No.
Anybody? Actually, I stopped reading Deadpool, so I won't get to it.
I dropped it. Still reading it for academic purposes. I know Dirt loves it when I say that.
Yeah, well, I'm just trying to figure out what academics you're building towards. But I am looking forward to the Deadpool Kills Deadpool, which is coming out. I still have that
next week.
Yeah, so I'll be reading that probably tonight or tomorrow. But
I haven't been reading any of the other Deadpool Kills books, so I don't know. It depends how bored I am this weekend.
Well, I know it's going to tie into the Deadpool core, which was a very fun series that they did where he grabbed Deadpools from different dimensions. Mm-hmm. So there was a lady Deadpool and a kid Deadpool and a Deadpool dog. And there was a zombie Deadpool that was just a head that had been chopped off of the body that was still animated. So, I mean, the Deadpool core was a fun idea and it did some neat things. So it's tying into that somehow. And that's the reason why I'm interested in it. But I've kind of been Deadpooled out by these stories the last couple of years.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. Or FF number 8.
I know everyone's dropped this. I'm ready to drop it now. This book was a confusing but fun read, believe it or not. But since I dropped Fantastic Four, I can't help but drop this book as well. It's kind of sad.
Join us.
Yeah. Peer pressure. I'm bowing to it, right?
Nothing wrong with that. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, did you notice that the cover was a Mad Magazine fold over?
I did. Oh. I did. I never bothered to fold it, but I did notice that.
Yeah, you just fold it and it says Doom down at the bottom. And obviously you can see the Doom faces in the background that fold together just to make the face of Doom. I thought it was, you know, kind of fun that they would, you know, put that on there. But then at the same time, it's like, okay, well, that's the only thing interesting about this issue.
Right. I mean, Doom plays a prominent part in this, and he's definitely a catalyst for the story to move forward. So, you know, it kind of goes back to, if I recall correctly, the beginning of this book was Scott Lang putting, you know, Scott Lang basically agreeing to lead this backup Fantastic Four and then kind of coming up with this idea to end Doom. If you guys remember.
What was the question?
Well, no, I just wanted to recap
what to prove this book himself.
Is about, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of nice that they're finally getting back to that, and it's how many issues into the book, right? It's 8 issues into the book, and they're finally getting back to, oh yeah, you know, we wanted to end Doom. Let's get around to that.
End Doom. Okay. Fairy Mats number 13 was the final issue. Okay. Gambit number 14.
Anybody?
I'm going to read all of Gambit once it ends, but I'll just wait till the last issue comes out, then I go back and start from the beginning again. Guardians of the Galaxy number 4.
Oh, I read this.
I'm enjoying
anybody else?
I'm enjoying this book now.
Really?
You enjoyed this book? I wasn't before, but now I am.
You enjoyed this book? Oh, I am not sure where this is going. I'm not happy about Pacelli's... I like Pacelli's art, but I'm not happy about her rendition of Rocket Raccoon. And I'm not...
Care. I don't care about the raccoon, so, but her art on everything, everyone else looks great.
Right, exactly. It's him that bothers me.
We didn't have any blam murdered you lines.
That's so. True. That's true. I'm not thrilled with Bendis's characterization of some of the other characters and Peter Quill becoming a wannabe Captain Kirk.
Yeah. You know? And I'm not sure what, like, this book is moving slow. For it to supposedly be so important to the Marvel Universe, nothing's really happened in it.
Agreed.
Except for, like, a cryptic telephone call between Pepper and Tony.
Well, and then, you know, there's Tony Stark doing his best Captain Kirk impression, too.
But they've been warning us that was going to happen. That's right. The whole point of him going in space, so he can bag space women. That's all they talked about. And having his origin retconned in his own.
That's right.
Hawkeye number 11. Pizza dog. If you've been enjoying Hawkeye, you probably really enjoyed this issue. It's just entirely from the point of view of Lucky, a.k.a. Pizza Dog.
This is definitely fun to read.
Yeah, I just like the art. Renditions and the diagrams and whatnot.
Do you notice the credits down in the
woof woof woof?
Yeah, woof woof woof.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, I have to say, I've never read Hawkeye.
Or Hawkeye.
Never really got into it, but last month's issue 10, I just decided I was bored one day, and so I just like, well, you know, I'll go ahead and read it. And I read it, and even though I didn't really know who some of the characters were and whatever, I enjoyed the story. Like, I got to the end of it and I was like, oh, that was, you know, actually kind of interesting. And so I think I may actually be starting to come around on Hawkeye and probably go back and start reading through some of those older issues and get brought back up to it, because I thought the art was beautiful. And the story was well enough told that even though I didn't know who the people were, the dialogue between them, you know, kind of explain the situation enough that I wasn't confused by anything that was going on. So it seemed to be very well crafted. And I know everybody talks about how great it is, so I may have to
come out. I was the same way. I'd never saw the appeal of it originally, and then hearing everyone drool over it online made me sort of not like it and made me despise it, because that's what happens.
Because you're a hipster?
That's right. You're a hipster.
But, well, do hipsters actually go back and have their opinion change once they even try the book again? If they even
that just makes you normal.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, enough. It was still early on. I think they were on like issue 7 or 6. So it was still early enough for me to go back and sort of read them again. And I enjoyed it. So I've been a fan ever since. Once I realized that this wasn't a superhero book, it was just Clint on his off days trying not to mess his life up, I appreciated it. Did you read? Roddy Cat says, just finished Hot Guy number 11. Still love this book. RIP Grills. Didn't expect the end. Grills still did.
Yep.
Spoilers.
Oh, great. Thanks.
Did you read Journey into Mystery 653?
Is that the last issue?
It doesn't say it, but I don't know. Did you read it?
I did not.
Oh, okay. I thought someone earlier said they read it. Moved along.
I'll try to get to it.
No, you don't have to. It's going to be canceled anyway. Nova number 5. I'm enjoying this book still.
This was okay. He's still fighting a leftover Thundercat.
But he defeated the leftover Thundercat.
Although, you know why I was interested in this? And Dirk, you there? You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
I wanted to kind of pick someone else who has... Pick the brain of someone else who may have a longer history. Is this the first? Did you read this book, by the way?
No, I haven't gotten to this one yet. No.
Okay.
Well, I have a history of Nova, kinda.
No, but in this book, there's what I believe is the first ever depiction of the ultimate nullifier actually activated and used. You know, and I was kind of underwhelmed by it. So, you know, maybe Dirt, you want to pick it up and read it and see what you think.
Or anyone else that's watching live or on video replay.
Yeah, if you read it,
with the ultimate nullifier, let us know.
We all remember. We all remember from the first appearance of the ultimate nullifier and the first appearance of Galactus. You know, when Reed Richards is stretching up towards Galactus with the nullifier, Galactus is like shaking in his boots because Reed's about to activate it, and he says, "No, no, no, I'll go away. Just hand it over."
I did like Sam Alexander quoting Stone Cold Steve Austin and "Don't trust anyone," which he actually says to Rocket Raccoon and Gamora.
Mm-hmm. Although I didn't realize it was a Stone Cold Steve Austin quote.
Scarlet Spider number 18, which I read. I'm enjoying this book now. Not that I wasn't enjoying it before, but I kind of read the early issues and then jumped off of it. And I replaced Venom with Scarlet Spider. So even though I'm going to take Venom back up once that new symbiote Mania is introduced, see what that's all about.
Okay.
Is that when they're going to do the Carnage series that they're working on?
I think that's totally different. That's it's a limited series Carnage thing.
I thought maybe it tied into that.
Yeah. All right. Secret Avengers number 5. Haven't read it yet.
I skimmed this.
It's very close on the books I'm going to drop, I think, just to make room for other stuff, because, I mean, nothing's really happening in it that I need to be aware of, I think.
I give this issue credit because it was definitely an interesting read because there are twists. You know, it's definitely still very much a political and espionage thriller. I definitely don't understand why they have to call it Secret Avengers. There's only two Avengers on the active, who are actively doing anything on this team. So,
well, yeah, because if they called it like Nick Fury Unleashed,
one would buy it. We know that.
They should have just called it. They should have just waited for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. the series to come out, so they could.
Wouldn't be surprised if they canceled this in favor of that.
Yeah.
You know, when they get to that point where the TV show is coming out in the fall, they'll probably do it. You know, kind of along the lines of a Winter Soldier. They'll have this book kind of die a quiet death and bring back an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. book.
Yeah, because I have to say, generally speaking, I enjoy the book, but it's never like I'm clamoring to get to it. Like, oh, there's new Secret Avengers out. It's always just kind of one of those things where, well, I've read everything else that's in my pile this week. What else is out there? Oh, there was a Secret Avengers last week. Maybe I'll check that out, you know?
Right. Yeah. Basically. That's where it's at right now. Adam Black says, I'm not sure if the Ultimate Nullifier was ever used. There's that.
Right, there you go. I mean, you know, this is now a reason to crack this book open and just kind of look at it and be like, oh, so that's what is supposed to happen. I was kind of underwhelmed by it, to be perfectly honest. So, you know, you guys go out there, read it, and get back to us on Twitter or on the website and let us know what you think.
Ultimate Comics, X-Men number 28. I'm just. Yep. Did you read it?
Yeah. Well, of course I did.
Okay.
What are you talking about? basically, in this one, one of the like background stories has been that Jean Grey is actually from Reed Richards. I forget what it's called. Tyon, I think. He made this place where mutants could go and live in the sky and be in this perfect world. And Kitty Pryde has started her own country in the United States called Utopia. They gave her land that's her own place to start their own mutant colony, basically. And Jean Grey has always been spying, lack of a better word, has been spying on Kitty Pryde and what's been going on there. And you find out that the part of the United States Army that was coming to attack all the mutants was actually being controlled by Psylocke. She had the ability to reach out with her mind and actually take control of, you know, dozens and dozens of people and mind control them and made them attack. And Jean Grey, you know, basically finds out and stops her because Jean Grey wants to basically take Kitty Pryde and all the people that she has and turn them to her side and make them join with her nation. So it's, again, getting into that kind of like political intrigue of you've got a nation versus this rogue agent, whatever. And at the end, you know, Kitty figures out what Jean Grey's up to. She confronts her. The two of them have a face-off. And basically, Kitty gets the better of Jean Grey on a on the debate. Like, they have a face-off. They're, you know, talking things out before it turns into this big battle. And Kitty Pryde gets the better of her. And you find out that Jean Grey actually has this hidden plot. She was going to attack if she couldn't have her way, and now the attack is beginning to unfold, and you don't know what it is. You just know that it is in motion and it is coming. So, as far as, you know, like I said, I've never been big into, you know, X-Men and all that kind of stuff, but this is playing out like, Deep Space Nine played out in Star Trek. It's these factions at war against each other, and that, you know, kind of intrigue on how this nation treats that nation and, you know, whatever. So I'm enjoying all of that. And again, I'm going to be sad when all of this goes away, when they destroy the Ultimate Universe.
Nice. Very well said. Nice eulogy. Nice eulogy for the Ultimate Universe and Ultimate X-Men.
Yeah, maybe when they do finally banish it all, I'll put on my suit and tie and we'll do a funeral here on the show. Oh, I got gonged on that? Tough crowd.
I'm going to lump, for time purposes, I'm going to lump Uncanny X-Force and Uncanny X-Men number 7 together.
Really? They're like nothing like each other.
They both have Uncanny in the name, and I haven't read either one of them. So,
well, just very quickly, Uncanny X-Men, it seems like there's more time travel going on.
Oh, is Dazzler in this issue?
No. Doctor Strange makes a guest appearance in this. So it's worth reading because it sort of develops, especially if you're a fan of Ileana, magic and wanting to see what she's, you know, kind of how she's handling her, having her powers broken post-Phoenix, you know, force.
Tim loves possession. Magic.
I know.
I love it so much that I was rushing to read this book. And then Irvin is still drawing it, so I'm just saying. I want this arc to be done. I want more stuff with Cyclops and his mutant revolution.
So just very quickly on Uncanny X-Force, it's more Phantom X. Really, why are they still developing him, her, them? You know, there's three of them now. Even though they're supposed to be disparate parts of his personality, there's basically three Phantom X's running around. So I sigh very deeply when I read this, and I'm so glad I dropped it.
He's also the character that I liked the least of all of them when they did Uncanny X-Force. Like, I read that first series that they did, you know, when they first brought in Deadpool and they had Wolverine in the gray suit and Psylocke leading the team. And Phantom X was the one guy on the team I just didn't care for.
Right. It's like they want to keep this more. I believe he's a Morrison character. They just want to keep him going.
Meh.
I agree. I give this one a bomb.
Roddy Cat says, he checked comicvine.com. It said that the ultimate nullifier was used against Abraxas, ? And in an alternate reality.
Right. So that's a grand total of one time or two times, maybe. So, you know, seeing it actually used in the mainstream 616 Marvel Universe was definitely a first. So, you know, like I said, just, you know, you guys go on and read and, you know, let us know what you think.
Okay. What else do we have? Wolverine number 5. I'm not reading that anymore.
It's a weird start to a two-part story. you know, Shield's being mind controlled. It's just kind of lame.
Are they just wasting time until this killable arc starts?
I think so. But they're setting it up too. They're definitely setting up this killable arc.
Okay. Wolverine and X-Men number 32. Haven't got to it yet.
There's some continuity stuff I got some issues with in this one. You know, it's Hellfire Saga Part 2. One thing I found that was weird was that Mystique is doing this Hellfire Academy thing in this book, but trying to buy control of Madripoor, spoilers, over an all-new X-Men number 13. So I thought it was only Wolverine and Spidey that could get around like this. You know what I'm saying? You know, the new Hellfire Club being run by brats makes it sufficiently annoying enough for me to actually stick around and see what happens to them.
Okay. Why are there 900 naked Nightcrawlers on the cover?
They're BAMFs. I don't even remember how they got them.
Yeah, I think I've asked this question before, but of course I don't remember. Where did these BAMFs come from?
They're like little demons or something.
Yeah. Weird. I'm getting a whole bunch of YouTube comments now.
Uh-oh.
Hold on, let me,
All right, so what do we got here? There's only a couple more books left.
Yeah. X-Men number 2. I like this. Oliver Corpel on art. And the writing by Brian Wood was very nice. I like the interplay dialogue between the various female X-Men characters. Mm-hmm. And some of the panels by Corpel were amazing.
We're
like
good,
some
yeah.
of them, like the ones that even did, they have dialogue, it was just the facial expressions from the characters were nice.
One thing I was confused by, though, is that Coypel drew and Wood wrote Rogue seemingly still having like her stolen Captain Marvel powers.
And I just like, assumed that in the first issue, she borrowed North Star's powers to do the stuff with the train, so maybe she still had those powers.
Maybe, but it seemed like she was doing a lot more super strengthy stuff.
Yeah.
You know, okay. You know, it seems like they make a point now when they write these stories to say whose power she's using. And it was kind of weird to see her, you know, back in with that power set.
And let's see. Then final Marvel book is Young Avengers number 6, which I did read. Young Avengers was a book that I was hating on when it first launched, but this issue and issue number 5 have turned me into a fan of the series now, so I'm going to stick with it.
No kidding.
Yeah. Who would have figured?
This issue was a tough read for me, but I definitely enjoyed the laugh. You know, like there were definitely some laughs in it. Yes.
I like them bringing, of course, Prodigy and Speed aren't members of the team yet, but you can see maybe eventually they'll be added. So I like the diversity, adding Prodigy. He's not a mutant anymore, which was, I'm glad they pointed that out because I didn't know he had lost his powers during M-Day. But he, like you said, he still possesses all the knowledge he gained while he had his powers. So that's interesting.
Right.
And not sure who this villain was that him and Speed took on. But
it's probably going to be revealed as like the villain that the rest of the team has to fight too. So
yeah.
It was a good lead. You know, it was a good setup, actually.
I just enjoyed these last two issues, 5 and 6 overall. It's been kind of nice. Kind of, like I said, pulled me back into the series. And, I don't know, I have a soft spot for teenage hero teen books.
Okay.
So, Teen Titans has to be bad for me not to be reading it anymore.
All right.
Well, because there's no Night Thrasher. So, I mean, there's nothing to draw you
in.
Oh,
no.
This is true. And no Speedball or Nova. That's the real draw. I think that's going to end it tonight, unless anyone read Valiant.
Nope.
I'm kind of just waiting for Quantum and Woody to start, and then Eternal Warrior. I need, like, number ones to start with my Valiant. And I'm going to read The Harbinger Wars whenever it finishes. I'll read, because I've read the first issue, then I'll read 2, 3, and 4. But, yeah, we're at the 2-hour mark, give or take.
Yeah, we started a little late, but we're all right.
Actually, there's one more book we should probably mention.
What do you got?
And this kind of ties into what we talked about earlier, and that's Mouse Guard, Legends of the Guard from Archaea.
Yes, I didn't get a chance to read it this week.
Legends of the Guard is kind of like a spinoff of Mouse Guard. Mouse Guard is set basically like medieval fantasy times, and you just have these, you know, animals, these mice that are the main characters as knights and barbarians and whatever. Legends of the Guard is an anthology series where they've gone out and found other writers and artists who are fan of the series, and they do these short stories. And it's the first series was based around them being set in a bar and just having like these bar tales that they tell each other. But I mean, some of the artists that they're getting, Stan Sakai, who does Usagi Yojimbo. Yeah. You know, he's coming in and doing Mouse Guard. When you have a guy like him who says, "I like your story about little mice in medieval times, let me do a story," you know, there's got to be something going on there. Legends of the Guard. I mean, Mouse Guard is, in and of itself, a great series, and it's one that if you haven't read, you definitely should check out. But Legends of the Guard is a really good kind of foot in the water type series where you could buy this one, because it's a 4-issue limited series, but it's all shorts. So it doesn't matter if you get issue 1 or issue 2 or issue 4, you know, just grab one of these and read it and you get an idea of what the world is like and what the characters are kind of like. And, you know, it's a good, you know, foot in the door to just kind of acclimate yourself to that world, because then you will want to go out and read the rest of them because Mouse Guard is a great series.
Right. And this is very, I haven't had a chance to read this particular issue, but most of the series is pretty kid friendly. So it's definitely got points for that. So I'm glad that you brought this up.
Yeah, it's not. Oh man, how's the way to term it? It's an all ages book, but it's not necessarily a kid's book.
Yes.
So there's not nudity. There's not foul language. No one's getting their head chopped off and, you know, entrails thrown all over the floor or anything like that. So it's an all ages book, but at the same time, it does hit some very deep emotions and concepts of life and death and what it means to fight for somebody and what it means to sacrifice yourself for somebody. And absolutely. So there is some really great deep stuff that little kids aren't necessarily going to get, but at the same time, it's nothing that's going to like give little kids nightmares or anything
right.
like that.
Absolutely.
Very emotional, deep characters that you care about. And so when something happens to them, it means something. But it's never, you know, it's not zombies ripping people's faces off or anything like that.
Absolutely. So what did you think of this issue?
I enjoyed it. It's
awesome.
With it being all short stories and, you know, Mouse Guard, it comes out, as you can see from this cover, it's in a square shape. All of their kind of all ages books from Archaea are always in the square shape. Fraggle Rock is the one that stands out most notably because that was the big Jim Henson tie-in and it, you know, came out in the same format. Because of that shape, it's a really good book that fits right on the back of my toilet. So it becomes the perfect book to just have a stack of these sitting in there. So when you go in and you sit down and you can grab one and you can read one story, you know, or if you're having one of those days where you're going to sit and read the whole issue. But if you're only in there for a couple minutes, you know, you can flip it open and read, you know, a 5-page story, an 8-page story, and just get through it. So anyway, I enjoy Mouse Guard. And I wanted
That's
to
awesome. Plug in there. I've got all the trades. This is the trade of the previous volume of Legends of the Guard. Got a copy of the Winter. Mm-hmm. And 2 copies of The Fall. One of them is autographed by David Peterson.
Oh.
So I'm definitely a fan, although I do prefer the trade format of the book. So I may forego purchasing this particular volume of Legends of the Guard until they put it out in a collected edition. But I'm definitely jazzed. I'm excited that they're coming out with more.
Well, that kind of goes back to the conversation we had at the open of the show, that those hardcovers are so well done.
Yes.
High quality and, you know, the binding. Like I did a podcast once. We had a guy on there who worked at a book printer's his entire life. I mean, that was just his trade. And it just so happened we had a bunch of Archaea books. And he was just blown away by looking at the craftsmanship and the quality of the books. It's not, you know, cheap, thrown together in you know, a factory in South America somewhere. I mean, these are, you know, high quality hardcover collectible books that you buy to have on your shelf to read again and again.
Definitely.
So, yeah, Tim, get with it.
Yeah, seriously.
Hey.
David Peterson. Peter, I even got a sketch. I got a sketch of a crab from David Peterson. I posted it on for the Cold Slither podcast when we did a recap of the New York Comic Con last year.
I think the only team that hasn't announced doing something with Mouse Guard that likes to get involved is Franco and Balthazar.
Mm-hmm.
The guys doing the Aw Yeah comics and everything like that.
Was that Tiny Titans?
Yeah, Tiny Titans and Superman Family Adventures. I'd like to see them try a Mouse Guard book. Oh, which, by the way, Aw Yeah Comics number 3 came out digital this week. That one came out as a digital first before the print. And that's another kid-friendly, all-ages book. You know, even if you're our age, you can read that one and enjoy it and laugh at some of the stuff in there because it's
cool.
A fun goofball book.
Nice.
All right, Tim, snap back. Back to you.
Time for parting shots. I want to thank everyone for tuning in live tonight. Shout out
thanks
to
for
Roddy,
your feedback.
Roddy Cat, at Roddy Cat on Twitter, and at @_Adam_Black on Twitter. And usually our usual cast of characters who probably weren't available to watch live tonight, like Variant Dash and at Variant Dash on Twitter and at Dorkgeekus on Twitter and at Ponderous watching on tape delay. As you see on my screen here, I am at TimDOGG98 on Twitter and also at The Click Nation on Twitter. Agent 70 is at Agent_70. Dirt is at @PCN_dirt on Twitter. Also go to popculturenetwork.com to check out his website. And theclicknation.com for my website. And this is the Click Nation Comic Book Chronicles. And we are signing off.
As long as them pages are hot and it's written by Chris Claremont.